This morning, on Senate Joint Resolution 11, House Joint Resolution 59. Representative Gianelli, would you come forward, please?
Morning.
Do you have any additional comments you'd like to make to the committee?
I just have a few things that I'd like to share if I can, and if it's possible, I'd like to bring Captain Greg Wilford up. Would you mind?
No, that's fine. Captain, come on up. Okay.
For the record, my name is Julie Gianella,
okay.
State Representative for District 38. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chair, and colleagues for having a hearing for H.A.R. 59. This resolution has been reviewed in both House Transportation and Revenue Committees and had a strong bipartisan majority vote on the House floor. Right now, Oregon is in great need of more state troopers to help protect our citizens and promote safety on our highways. With a 32% decline of patrol services division in the past 18 years, and the population increasing 23%, and the number of licensed drivers in Oregon increasing 33%, and the number of miles traveled on Oregon highways has increased 64%, the decline in uniformed troopers has significantly impacted the department's ability to provide police services in our state and interstate highways. Oregon needs a sharp increase for the patrol services division. The 100 troopers funded in the department's 1999 and 2001 budget represents less than a quarter of what local communities have identified as state police service needs. H.A.R. 59 will provide the legislature with the additional funding options for state police troopers for the future. The measure does not allocate any funds, nor does it have a fiscal impact on the highway fund next biennium. It only provides future funding options for the legislative consideration. HJR has a limitation on the amount of highway fund revenues that can be used for this purpose. It restricts any use of the fund to state police patrol troopers only and does not allow any backfill of current general funds from the patrol division budget. This resolution represents sound policy that a portion of the state highway fund safety revenues be available to support enforcement as part of our state transportation system. H.A.R. 59 would provide the stable funding that our state troopers need and deserve. I would like to introduce Captain Greg Wilford from the state police to talk to you about H.A.R. 59. Thank you.
Captain, you're welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. For the record, Captain Greg Williford, Director of the State Police Patrol Services Division. I want to first thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this, both of these bills, and also thank you, Representative Gianella, for your support of the State Police and Patrol Division. I provided testimony, as you know, last week regarding SDR 11, which was quite detailed. I have testimony today regarding HDR 59. I will be brief. I will just like to underscore Representative Gianella's comments that we are very supportive of HDR 59. It would return, again, back to the legislature an option for funding state police patrol troopers. It's limited to patrol troopers, patrol division operations only. It also has a floor in it, meaning that it has a limitation preventing a backfill of the current budget of the state police for future years. It would have to be used only if it's used at all for future funding above the current service level of the patrol division. We believe it does make a lot of good sense to tie some level of the state highway fund dollars to safety and transportation safety on state and interstate highways for state police patrol operations. Very, very grateful for the 100 troopers that were part of this legislative budget. The funding for the remaining gap, the unfilled 1,416 community identified positions, is going to continue to present challenges, I believe, to this body and also to the agency in meeting service levels and finding the available funds for that if we rely solely on the state general fund. Since we were removed 18 years ago, it has been extremely unstable with the competition for dollars, and we believe that getting back into the highway fund at some level, at least providing you the option for that, will help funding decisions in the future. With that, I will close and be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Have you seen the three proposals, SGR 11, HGR 59, and the county's amendment? And do you have an estimate of the revenue generated under all three of them, what each one would be?
Mr. Chair, I'm familiar with certainly the two proposals on the resolutions. The county amendment, you're speaking of the one that was that would tie it to driver's license
right.
future increases.
Right.
I'm not speaking on that particular proposal of that amendment. I don't know what the exact figures would be for that. I know that it depends on how the formula and how the fund is calculated, whether it comes off the top of the fund or somewhere after ODOT share and then local county share. So I don't have a specific dollar amount for any of them. I do know what our funding is for, of course, the next biennium to fund the remaining gap if it were to be phased in. It really depends on how you calculate the fund. It would be limited. I know we've done some models with limiting it to just vehicle registration fees, and that did not fully fund the remaining 316 service gap. But again,
just using vehicle registration fees did not.
Mr. Chair, that's correct, and that was under your proposal. I believe it was the 2777. Our models on that calculations did not fully fund those positions. It was based on the fee increases.
Okay. Questions, committee members? Senator Chidwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Captain, how do you envision this HGR 59 to work as far as funding? I just heard you say a figure of 316 as a gap. Figure that 316 patrolmen?
Mr. Chair, Senator Chidwell. We would envision it as being a ways and means discussion every 2 years as far as what level, if any, would be funded from the state highway fund if it were to be affirmatively voted in by the people.
What would you like to see, I guess, is more my question.
Okay.
What are you thinking? What is your vision for convincing the legislature that they should fund at a particular level?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cusab, our vision our strategy has been to receive the 100 troopers from the general fund, which we are going to receive for this next biennium. Both have some roll-up costs that are associated with those. The long-term strategy for the agency is to seek a stable funding source that we can bring back the need and the use of our current resources to the ways and means every 2 years and demonstrate what we're doing with our current resources and also what the community has identified for our needs. And we would long-term would like to see the community needs fully funded. And so currently, from our resource gap analysis that we conducted over the last 15 months, that has come up to 316 additional positions.
Yes.
The highway, there is a section of the highway, the DOT budget, that is highway safety. And I heard the word, as you testified earlier, that we should be, have safe highways and roadside stops and so forth. And this is one way to finance, at least for state patrol. Would this portion come out of the highway safety portion of the ODOT budget? And why doesn't it now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cusab, again, that would be a ways and means debate on where the fund came from. It would be an option that they come from the highway fund out of the state share. Where they come from and what their where those revenues come from the different sources of taxation within the highway fund is really a debate for the ways and means process. Currently, we're not able to use any of those funds for enforcement, policing, type of highway safety as part of your transportation safety structure because the Constitution does not allow it.
Okay. then one for the question if I can, Mr. Chair. 315 people in your gap study is what amount of money?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cusub is fully phased in 24 months in a biennium. That's about $52 million for 316 troopers. And that is, of course, fully phased in without any federal fund leverage at all. That number would be driven down significantly because we would obviously not realistically phase in 316 in one biennium. We would phase them in over time, and as they're phased in, they're not fully 24 months, so the cost of those goes down pretty significantly, depending on how many come in.
Any further questions, Representative Butler?
The estimated cost of per biennium for fully equipped trooper is how much?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, it is about $155,000 per biennium for one trooper.
That includes the automobile?
That includes the automobile and laptops, and that includes the uniform and all the equipment they wear.
$155,000, and if we're dealing with 316 just short of $50 million. Approximately $49 million.
Mr. Garrison, about where that's corrected. Pretty close to the $52 million there.
Captain, HCR 59, if we were to restrict it to just vehicle registration and driver's license, I know you said you didn't have an estimate, but would there be enough money generated? Is it your feeling, just limiting it to two or three sources within ODOT funding, that it would generate enough revenue to put your 360 troopers back on the highway?
Mr. Chair, I don't know without looking at full models there, and if it's tied to increases, what those might be in the future, and there'll be an amendment had it tied to just increases. And those, not knowing what the increases would be, we're not able to calculate what that would be. I don't know if it would fully fund the 316 or not. And again, depending on how it's calculated.
Okay. Let me ask you this. In 1981, when the legislature passed Senate Joint Resolution 7 and took state police out of highway funding, what was the state police's portion of the budget at that time, ODOT funds or highway funds, versus what they are receiving now?
Mr. Chair, I believe the percentage of that, it was just for policing was the language they used then, and it was not tied to any specific tax revenue source. And it was about, our calculations, about 8% of the fund went to fund state police patrol activities.
8% of the total ODOT funds generated?
That's correct.
Went to state police?
Yes.
And what would 8% of $1 billion? That's $80 million.
Mr. Chair, I think it was a little less than that as far as the actual dollar amount that went in there. I know, I think it was when they took out state policing and parts out of there 19 years ago, I believe that was about $50 million that they ended up using elsewhere within the fund. But part of that would have been parks as well.
Yeah.
I don't have them specifically in front of me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The 8% included OSP and parks, or was that just the OSP portion?
I don't know. There was OSP and state parks in there at the time, but I don't know how much of it was given to who. Basically, all this does is put the ballot measure out there before the voters to say, yes, we want it to be part of highway funding, and no, you don't. And then the real issue is going to be fought out in this session and enabling legislation to say, are you going to increase vehicle registration, driver's licenses, and how are you going to pursue generating the revenue to go here? That's going to be the real big issue.
Mr. Chair, I have a serious concern with the whole issue of of bringing this back before the general public and before the people for a vote, then that since the issue will be in part similar to what's probably happened in Measure 66, and that is that the tens of millions of dollars that are presently moving towards the state police out of the general fund will then move against the highway funds, which the people were pretty emphatic about the fact that these should be used for maintenance of the highways. And I think this subcommittee has had ample testimony that the highways are moving from good to poor at a faster rate than what we are presently collecting funds in. And my concern is that the opportunity to backfill out of what I think the people presently consider to be money which should be set aside for asphalt, oil, sand, gravel, chips, steel, concrete, and those kinds of things. And if we don't put some kind of a limiting factor on how much would be available, and the AOC's proposal is that it would be based upon future increases of driver's license titles, transfers, and those kinds of things, that if we leave it open to all gasoline funds, which would eventually perhaps include weight mile fees and diesel 2 taxes if we move to that direction, registrations of bigger trucks and so forth, that the amount of funds that would be moved in this direction would be potentially scalped, which funds are presently directed towards the first dollar and the last dollar under the present desire to make sure that we have truth in transportation, if you will. The first and last dollar collected for these new funds should be dedicated for roads and highways, as opposed to bringing the police into it.
In all due respect, in 1980, when the legislature passed Senate Joint Resolution 7, the campaign was funded by a group called Association General Contractors, and they had basically the same attitude as you, that everything should be used in soil, rock, and oil, and that they should be the sole benefactors of it. Oregonians were promised at the time by legislators that you have no control or jurisdiction over now. Don't worry, there's enough money in the general fund. That was true prior to 1980. And then along came ballot measure 5 and other ballot measures restricting where we can and cannot spend money. And what we've learned out there is a steady decline over the last 19 years. The state police. We didn't arrive here yesterday or last week. We arrived here 19 years ago when we started cutting state police. Now, you can make your argument on behalf of the county. If the county was part of the charade in 1980, it said, let's take the state police out of ODOT, or out of transportation funding. And they have been arguing against this for a long time. At the expense of up in the ante, so counties and cities can get more revenue. And so I'm not too inclined to be a lackey for the counties. I'm more inclined to say, how are we going to get the funding for the state police back in the budget and get it funded properly? Now, the problem I have with your amendment is, if you look at the amendment language, any future increase... What assurances do you have that there's going to be any future increases to the state police or vehicle registration fees? What future do you have that you can assure me the vehicle registration is going up? What assurances do you have that you can give me the vehicle registration is going to be increased? I don't think you have any of those. So what you're in essence promising the state police is 0-0. And to me, that is not even good faith. That's going backwards the wrong way.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I appreciate your commentary on that. I guess the template is for us in the
ballot measure 66, which has just recently been passed by the voters, and that is that what happens is that we begin to backfill, and as far as I'm concerned, there's this insatiable appetite that says that we should establish an elite police force that ought to be controlled at the state level as opposed to the local level. The highest local elected law enforcement officials in this state happen to be 36 sheriffs. Not any one of the members of the state police, not even the commandant himself, is an elected police officer. And so I guess my position is that certainly if we could assure ourselves that these increases in these fees, which would include the title transfers and titles and driver's licenses themselves, were available for policing as opposed to going into the highway trust funds, which certainly the counties and cities use, and as far as I know, depending upon what actually happens with regard to the current proposals with 4 cents or 5 cents or 6 cents, whatever the proposals are, I feel like that we've had ample testimony before this subcommittee that indicates that our roads are going backwards at a pretty heavy pace, and if we don't get more of that material out there, and I don't know anything about the general contractors or anyone else. I do know that the testimony that's been given to us has been given to us by Director Krenikin, her engineers, and her staff, indicating that we are going behind presently on our roads. If we dip into this and still do not have the either 4 or 5 or 6% or cent per gallon increase or other changes in weight mile, that we're just going to exacerbate the problem and go behind even more rapidly if such an amendment was proposed and passed by the voters.
Any further questions or comments? Thank you both very much.
Chair, if I may, a comment?
Yeah.
Regarding the backfill on the House side, HR 59, concern was expressed, and the current language of 59 prevents a backfill of the current general fund dollars. It does not allow that. Specifically, only if the Ways and Means process in the future were to allocate any highway funds for State Police Patrol Division, it would have to be above the current service level at that time. So that concern, I believe, is addressed in the current language.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I'd like to thank you, Senator Hannon. I'd like to thank you for your 24 years of service in the area of law enforcement. In looking out for law enforcement, and you know, someone needs to. These men put their lives on the line, and they can be a forgotten people. And I just appreciate all your work that you've poured into your life in 24 years, and I thank you for it.
Thank you very much. All right, further questions? If not, thank you very much. Kelly Taylor, would you come up with some numbers on ODOT funding? Staff just handed me a piece of paper here, and I think these numbers are a little errant in the fact that 9901, it would generate $34 million. Well, it wouldn't be voted on until year 2000. The 2001 session would have to deal with it, so there would be no money that would be generated in the next voting.
Mr. Chair, if I could clarify, those numbers are based on the House Bill 2082, the increases of a $10 increase in the registration fee. And if you wanted a general number of what that revenue would generate for the $10 increase that the legislature is currently considering in increasing registration, it will generate $34 million in the next biennium and approximately $50 million in 2103 and then $52 million in the biennium beyond that. That's based on the on all of the criteria laid out in House Bill 2082. Just to give you an idea of what a $10 registration could generate, an increase.
Just $10 increase in registration.
That's correct.
Okay. That was getting back to Representative Butler's question, how much revenue would it in fact generate?
And we have testimony, Mr. Chair, that 200 and
or let's say 316 officers would, in today's dollars, would be a total of $49 million per biennium. And that, when we look at the registration, the $10 registration fee alone, generating in a full biennium, $01-03, $50 million, it comes very close to the $49 million that's recognized for the CSL rollout.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, as far as driver's license and title fees go, I don't believe there's been an increase, a general increase in either one of those for a number of years, and I think Kelly could, about 10 years. And so that's not an area where we're going to generate any revenue to pay for additional services.
Mr. Chair, if I may add to that, Kelly Taylor, Department of Transportation. That's true. Susie's correct. The driver license fees haven't been changed, I think, since the 89 session. And there's a bill that's been passed and signed that's changing the driver's license to an 8-year cycle, so it's going to be pushing out the revenue again. And there's about 2.5 million drivers in the state, just so you know how many driver's licenses we're dealing with. So if you were trying to figure out money there. But it has been some time. And I don't think that the registration has changed for almost that amount of time, too. It's been quite a while.
Okay. Further questions? No, thank you, Kelly. Ms. Jordan, do you have some comments you'd like to make? We'll close. Is there anybody else that wishes to testify on this? See some other names signed up. You have a choice. You can either talk or kill the bill. All right, Mr. Pinhollow, you got 30 seconds to get your amendment. You've already... All right.
Okay. Mr. Chair, thank you. Our amendments would limit the increase to paragraph B, which deals with... ownership, operation, and use of motor vehicles. We would propose narrowing the Constitution to just that area of the Constitution, keeping it out of the area of gas tax and weight mile as taxes as the Highway Fund currently provides under Section Paragraph A.
Bill, the increase only to driver's license, or does it include the increase to vehicle registration and title transfer?
Mr. Chair, our amendment originally to both SGR 11 and this bill was to limit it to driver's license fees. However, Representative Butler had suggested that that be expanded to include, and I believe to include
titles and title transfers.
Titles and title transfers in addition to driver's license fees. This would also be the section under which automobiles are registered. So the amendments could be revised to deal with any one of those provisions and still keep this from being attached to gas tax increases in the future.
Okay, so your amended language is in Section E?
Section E would be amended to read from levies under paragraph B of subsection 1, from increases to driver's license fees after the effective date of this amendment, and goes on to say may be used for policing.
And you've included the word registration in title fees? Representative Butler, is that your...
Yes, sir. Increases to driver's license, comma, titles, and title transfer inserted before the word fees.
Okay, just a moment. We're making copies of the amendment for all committee members.
We're on 11 or 59.
We're going to be amending House Order Resolution 59. Yes.
While we're waiting, I might just go over, I've handed out to you a comparison of the key elements of SJR 11, HJR 59, and AOC, All three refer the measure to an election. SCR 11 refers it for a special election at the next biennial primary, and HJR 59 is for the next general election. SJR 11 allows the use of highway funds for state and local police for policing public highways, roads, and streets, and roadsides. That includes motor fuel taxes, registrations, licensing, all of the money in the trust fund. Likewise, HJR 59 allows all of restricts use of the highway funds, or allows use to Oregon State Police. It doesn't differentiate. It focuses on the Oregon State Police, and which would preclude the money then going directly or allocating it to a local policing effort, so you couldn't do block grants, although I think the state police could if there were additional revenues. And then the other feature of HDR 59 as, I've forgotten whether you're a lieutenant or a captain or Wolford, pointed out is that it does restrict the use of the highway funds increases in the budget only, and it preserves the current service source of revenue. So where we're currently using general funds in the state police or other or federal, those sources would remain. This is just for increases in police services.
Where is the language that,
in HJR 11, it's the last paragraph of the HJR 59. Of the bill. No. This yellow thing is not the bill. You have a white sheet. And on the back page is that. This is the
original.
Someone can it.
You will take the place of the existing E.
That's the restriction. It's the last line in HDR 59. And then the AOC amendments you've discussed just restricts it to the increases in driver's licenses, although the county is amending this here to registration and...
No, that was to titles and title transfers.
And, but not registration?
It does not. It should not have registration.
Okay. Now, the difference there is that there is no additional revenue generated at all in the AOC amendments unless you increase the driver's license and title.
And as the chair indicates, Mr. Chair, respectfully, that would be sorted out in the next general session as to how that would, as to the amounts that would be set aside for the policing activities that are referred to when we combine the Senate 59, Senate Joint Resolution 11, with the House House Joint Resolution 59.
The question I would have, though, if we were to adopt your amendment and make it and title fees, you're proposing elimination of registration.
The registration, Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that the registration would be substantially enhanced in lieu of modifications to the weight mile provision is what is presently being discussed. That registration, which had previously been $350, will soon become $4,000, and that those would be a part and parcel of a substitute for the weight mile tax, which has been used as part of our basic in lieu of diesel fuel taxes in the past, historically. And that would that's what compensates the elimination of the weight mile. So the registrations, again, the fees, the words that have been placed here, drop the word registration, insert the word titles, and title transfer fees. And the word fees is already in the bill, and that would be inserted after the word licenses, driver's licenses, comma, titles, and title transfer fees after the effective date of this amendment. Now, in that regard, the legislature has the ability to go ahead and say, well,
a $10 fee for a 2-year increase in the registration of an automobile, which would generate, $103, $50 million, is inadequate in relationship to the fees that are being charged in all of the adjacent states. This is something less than 30% of all of the adjacent states. And that if they decided to add another $10 on top of that, then to accommodate 316 officers at $49 million, it's done with $10 added by the legislature in license fees, or rather title fees alone.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, the $10, the $39 million, $34 million that we're talking about was on the registration fee.
I'm sorry, that's right. It was automobile registration.
That's right. I don't know what kind of an increase you'd have to place on a driver's license fee to generate the same kind of revenue.
Well, the other point that I would like to make there, Mr. Chair, is this is certainly related to ownership and the use of the automobile. And of the trucks and the other vehicles, when they start talking about the driver's licenses, the titles, the title transfer fees, and even the registrations, those are certainly more directly connected to the policing issues as opposed to the amounts which are raised through diesel tax, gasoline tax, and those kinds of funds which are and should be dedicated and have been in the past up until 1980 SCR 7, dedicated for the utilization on our highways. And I think that we have made some Herculean moves in this particular legislature to move towards keeping those funds dedicated towards improving the highways and so forth. And that's why I would encourage us to utilize, and if necessary, in order to come out of this particular forum, if we need to include registrations there, then that's going to be a phenomenal amount. My concern still comes back to the issue of, we have the template before us in Measure 66 with the backfill issues, and that would still be a major issue. But if it is dedicated to policing, as your bill provides, Mr. Chair, and I really encourage that, because that recognizes all level of policing. I just received the newspapers in from my district just this past week indicating that the grant funds received for local law enforcement made some great strikes, millions of dollars worth of drugs and other things were picked up in just some down on Highway 95 where Representative Beck just from traversed our state. There's very little policing that goes on down there, and people recognize that's a place that needs some local policing. And so the local police have been very effective and can be very effective in the utilization of those funds, and I would encourage that.
Representative Starr. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In order to move this along, I'd move Representative Butler's proposed amendments to the bill. And in the process, if I could
move to that motion. Move the work session on House Joint Resolution 59.
I move Representative Butler's proposed amendments to the bill. And if I could speak to the motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Starr moves that we restore Line 7 to the existing language. After Line 20, insert sub E. If from levies under paragraph sub D of subsection 1 of this section, from increases to driver's license fees, comma, registration, and title fees, after the effective date of this amendment, may also be used for policing, public highways, roads, streets, and roadside rest areas in this state. Is there further discussion?
Yes, sir. Yes, I'd like to speak.
Yes.
I would like to oppose the amendment. I think that I like the resolution as it stands now. It gives the legislature flexibility in how we address this issue. I respectfully disagree with Representative Butler. This has vastly different from Measure 66. Measure 66 specifically allocated specific revenues, a specific source. This does not. This gives the legislature leeway in funding state police from gas tax dollars and say we have to. It doesn't say we have to spend it here. It doesn't say we have to spend it there. It doesn't say we have to spend a specific amount. I think this is a measure that's responsible and allows the legislature the opportunity to address this issue during the legislative process in an open forum, open debate. And so I would oppose the proposed motion.
Further discussion,
Mr. Chair.
Ditto. Okay. Quick call the roll, please.
No.
Me?
Aye.
No.
Schrader?
Aye.
Cutler?
Aye.
Starr?
No.
Hannah?
No. Motion fails.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Health Care Resolution 59 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
I think we do have to amend it.
At least one thing. Well, you tell me what, and I'll do it.
Are we taking state police though?
Yeah, it's put in the state police.
Okay, would you handle that right now?
Mr. Chair, to allow some flexibility, what you would want to do is to, in line 21, remove the words Oregon State Police from the line, and just then it would read, may also be used for the policing of public highways.
That will allow local money to go to locals as well.
If the legislature chooses to do that, yes.
And what about line 23 where it says the state police?
Same.
Delete that and just insert the word policing?
No, Mr. Chair, I would leave that there because that's referring to increasing the backfilling issue that has to do with not allowing the legislature to go back and say, well, now that we can use highway funds, we'll take all your general fund money away and replace it with highway funds. That's a little bit different there.
Okay. Representative Starr now moves that we adopt the language change in line 21, the House Joint Resolution 59, line 21, deleting by the Oregon State Police.
Okay.
Representative Butler.
The question was, referring back to your Senate Joint Resolution on line 7, I think that you're going to have to include the and policing at that particular point, or else it's going to be fatally flawed, is it not?
Which line?
Line 7.
He's talking about referring, adding this right there to in the Senate resolution of the House.
Mr. Chair, I don't think it matters if you put it up there in 3A and you leave it in because E qualifies what other sources of revenue can be used for.
That's why my question.
I can, after you pass this out, I can check with legislative council, and if there's a problem, I can bring it down. But I think that would be it.
Okay. You've heard the amendment, the motion on the amendment. Is there any further discussion? Representative Butler.
My understanding, so I have it for the record here, that by deleting the four words, the Oregon State Police, from line 21, that this money then would be available for use by local police agencies, including cities and counties, and that the state police would be limited to the service levels that are presently on the effective date of this amendment.
Correct.
As allocated by the legislature.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, if the committee would approve a conceptual amendment so I can get the wording correct with legislative council so it meets the intent of the committee, I would, because I want to make sure that second line also doesn't preclude what you're trying to accomplish with the flexibility. You're trying to do two things. One, you're trying to make it more general so you can use it for state and local, and you're also trying to make sure that the state police budget doesn't get backfilled with this highway money. I don't want those two, the language in that to be cross-pursued.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Okay.
Representative Beck.
Well, I'm like you, Representative Starr's comments about maximum flexibility as a countermeasure, and while I'm troubled with what happened to Measure 66 and the whole backfill thing we've discussed, at least we have a chance to discuss the decision the legislature made. And I guess I'm a little troubled by the provision in here putting in the Constitution a base budget level for an agency 10, 20 years from now. It's just going to be one more little bizarre feature of our Constitution. And as much as I don't like to see the backfilling, I think we should keep these constitutional amendments as broad, as flexible as possible. And I think it's bad public policy to be putting that kind of budgetary restriction in the Constitution. I don't think it should be in there.
Well, I've heard the word backfilling for about the last time today. Yeah, the governor proposes and we dispose. And it was the governor's idea to backfill.
I agree.
And I get damn sick and tired of hearing about the legislature backfilling. We did what the governor asked us to do.
Yeah.
So if we want to
bid, challenge him. You can challenge him.
Representative Schrader.
We're discussing the amendment of the bill or all the above.
Oh, well, there's an amendment pending before the committee.
May I ask a question?
Representative Schrader.
On the amendment to delete the words Oregon State Police. In other words, we're going to be using state tax dollars to be funding local police services, potentially.
If that's a future decision that the legislature will make somewhere in the distant future. Okay. Next biennium after or never, if that's what they choose to do.
And so then that next legislature or future legislature in some future biennium would have to come up with some plan to decide which local police services and which portion of the state get additional money. Is that correct?
Well, you're asking for me to try to inject a policy decision that may or may not be made and at what time. I think Representative Beck was saying, let's build in the greatest amount of flexibility to allow a future legislature to determine that. And so not until it's done can I tell you what county is going to get money, but typically most bills that pass this legislature affect 36 counties collectively. Most cities are affected collectively. So how it is going to be dealt with and how it's going to be spent, I really can't tell you because I don't know what future sessions you're going to bring.
Right. Then my comment is I agree with the chair. I don't know what the future session is going to bring. Some will vote no. I don't think we should be in the business of subsidizing local police forces. That's why they have local sheriff. That's why they have local cities. Our job here at the state legislature is to deal with state taxpayer dollars, and state taxpayer dollars, as far as law enforcement goes, should be going to state police only. I have questions about the bill in general, but some will vote no.
Okay. Is there further discussion? If not, the motion before us is on line 21 of House Joint Resolution 59, delete the words by the Oregon State Police. So this is a paragraph that reads, may also be used for the policing of public highways, roads, streets, and roadside rest areas. Is there further discussion?
Are you striking that last sentence then, Mr. Chair?
The very last sentence?
No.
No. Okay, is there further discussion? Is there objection? Senator Yee, Senator Cutum, and the motion is dead. Is there any further discussion on House Senate Resolution 59 or Senate Joint Resolution 11? Representative Schrader.
I just want to make sure I understand. We don't have any, my understanding is that the highways are in tremendous amount of need, and that's the reason we had a gas tax come up before the last two sessions. And we've also put a surcharge on my county in particular, along with two others, because of their high growth needs, supposedly, rather than finding a way to deal with that on a statewide basis, and most of those going to be enforced in my area. And yet, despite the fact that we have all these needs, we don't have any gas tax, we don't have any gas package to fund the roads. Now we're going to also ask the voters, even though we don't have enough money to do what we've asked you about the last two sessions, we're also going to further reduce the ability to fund the roads by funding another agency out of your registration, license, gas tax revenue. Is that an accurate statement?
Partially and partially not. It's a reflection. I think the legislature would probably look at additional revenues rather than trying to spread the peanut butter a little thinner. So, quite frankly, it's a future action. There's nothing in here that guarantees that immediately the Oregon legislature is bound to deliver X amount of dollars to the state police, the sheriff, or city police. So, I think what it does is an attempt to create flexibility.
Okay, now you think yeah. The last comment, sir. Appreciate the comments there, but the real world is the price of everything goes up over time. The reason we're in this trouble now is it costs more to do the road in the future. It's going to cost more for the state police. I'm a strong supporter of the state police. I'm more than willing to pay them out of the general fund. I just don't see, until we do something about the roads in the state, that it makes any sense at all to add a whole other outfit to be funded out of a very limited amount of money. It just makes absolutely no sense. I think the voters out there are going to be going flat out crazy. So I'm going to be a no on that.
Okay. Mr. Jim Butler, do you have a comment you want to make?
I just wanted to echo that, which we've already heard, Mr. Chair, before, that I am so concerned with the issues of trying to ferret out what we have heard from Director Cronican about the percentage of our highways that are moving from fair to poor and from good to fair. And from poor to unusable, that until we did have a complete package and could reverse the trend with regard to our present gasoline tax issue, I just could not be in favor of trying to fund another agency out of this particular little dollar.
Okay. Anybody else? Senator Kuzak.
Because I've been silent this whole time, and I don't want to belabor this, but I do want to echo some of the concerns of what were expressed. There are limited funds in this, in the highway funds, and I think we should spend them on highways. There may be a safety issue. However, the numbers do not show us that there's a tremendous safety issue and that we need more state patrol. In spite of that, we have funded 100 more state patrolmen through the general fund, and so I will be voting no on this as well.
Okay. If not, we'll close the hearing on Joint Resolution 11 and House Joint Resolution 59, and also close the work session on both these bills. Open the work session on Senate Bill 1531. This is a bill that was heard in the Public Affairs Committee. It was sent down to Revenue or Ways and Means because of a potential fiscal impact. In speaking with the Senate President and Majority Leader, it indicated that the Task Force on Mental Health Parity will probably be part of the Human Resources Committee of the interim, and it should remove the fiscal impact of the bill so as to address the issues as it concerns legislative leadership. The other portion of the bill increases by 25% the amount of coverage that is provided in statute. This is the only statutory coverage that we currently have in statute for mental illness, drug and alcohol dependency, whatever. We don't have the same limitations for heart or sugar diabetes or kidney or anything else. The Majority Leader has worked with me to try to craft a version of a bill that provides some increase because not since the inception of mental health benefits have we increased the benefit level. So it's been 12 years since any increase has been changed. I would certainly entertain any of the city's questions or ask staff what questions you might want.
I guess I have a comment or question, maybe, in looking over the information on this bill. I see that it's raising the level statutorily, as you just said, Mr. Chair. But I also heard you say earlier, when we talked about gambling and so forth, that some of these things are choices that individuals make. I do agree that there are mental health issues that are as serious and need and require the kind of attention that a liver, a heart, all of those things require. And those I would, psychotic problems and schizophrenia, and I would say the four major mental illnesses that happen. I'm very supportive of raising the ability for coverage for those things. I guess I have a little bit of reservation on raising statutorily what an insurance company must pay for substance abuse problems. And I'm wondering too, for instance, I have not read it, gone through it in detail, so I don't know, and maybe you can answer this for me. If a family or somebody has problems, they're depressed or they have family problems or something, does this bill address the fact that an insurance company has to pay for counseling, and does it raise that level as well?
Only if it's included in the policy.
Okay.
If it's not included, then individuals don't apply. So if I had an individual policy, mental health doesn't apply. If I have self-employed insurance, like I'm a large business and I carry my own insurance in-house, it doesn't apply. So these would apply to group plans, anything from 2 to 25 or 2 to 50, something like that.
And they already, a lot of them have that kind of...
That's already in existence. Yeah. That's the reason it's not classified as a mandate.
Okay.
Because it is an existing mandate, all it is increasing your coverage. Hmm. Representative Schrader.
I have actually some of the same concerns that Senator Cusack does. I'm not in the habit of sanctioning poor life choices, and yet I do realize there's a great need for mental health in general, and information I've seen shows that the impact theoretically on the premiums is not supposed to be very much. But I have at least some concerns, serious concerns, very serious concerns about including alcohol and drug treatment in this whole program, or if there are some limitations or sidebars I'm not aware of that encourages people or somehow gets them, so we're not on the hook for doing it every time. Is there anything in the bill that says if they go through it once for a substance abuse that they can't get it again? In other words, there's still some responsibility on the part of the individual that's somehow in the bill.
There's restrictions on the existing statutes that limits us for a 2-year benefit period. So I don't know what you're trying to get at. You mean the person that goes in recovery and is treated for alcoholism or drugs and comes out and 6 months later is ready to go back in? Is that your concern?
Yeah, I guess so, sir, yes.
Well, if it was in the same 2-year period, they would only get the benefit once. But they wouldn't be able to keep knocking at the door.
Let me, and say they go through the 2, they only get the 6-month treatment in 2 years. 2 years after that, the next 2-year period, are they eligible for treatment again?
After that 2-year period? Yes.
I have some sometimes I believe strongly in personal responsibility. I'm sure we all do, and I guess that comes down on the side that the person should be taking care of.
Well, it's interesting that we hear a lot of discussion here that we believe in mental health, but we may not have the same level of support for drugs and alcohol. I'd like to share that having gone through recovery and spent the last 18 months sober, it was a bad lifestyle choice. But yeah, it was also caused by some mental problems. Am I ashamed of that? Hell no. I think everybody's sitting at this table is affected some way or another. The only thing that separated me from the people I was in recovery with is that I had two insurance policies paying 110% of everything. Some of them didn't even have any, and they were hopping their houses and everything else to get treatment. Now, we can either spend wisely up front and show a genuine cost savings later by showing the fact that we can either treat the symptoms or we can treat the cause. And it really disturbs me greatly that people make such a big deal about this as if it's going to bankrupt the state of Oregon and the employers. The employers are already paying for it through uninsured coverage and high premiums. Just this year, I have insurance clients whose policies are increasing anywhere from 15 to 28%. That's without mental health being added in here. So, come on. Give me a break. When we talk about this, it's less than 1%, probably about 1% increase, potentially, to the premium. And, if the decision this committee is going to have to make is something I feel very strongly about, and I've been given a second chance, and I'm going to help at least one person. And that will be the greatest satisfaction, is to help one person. Not myself, but one person.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator
Yee. I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
I want to know, with a 25% increase in benefits, what is it going to cost the state government and local government and private clients? Could we have a fiscal impact on what is the cost to state, local, and private individuals?
Yeah, that's figure.
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, it is unfortunately not a figure. As Senator Hannon pointed out, the benefits are affected on policies that are group policies, and what I have found in preparing the fiscal impact statement on this measure, actually on previous measures that would have created a 100% parity for mental health and chemical dependency treatment, is that employers who provide group policies for their workers go through a sequential process each year to work with insurance carriers to determine a program to offer their employees. And those negotiations go on with some frequency. The state of Oregon recently, through the Public Employees Benefits Board, completed its program review for the year 2000 and has created a program that does, in fact, increase some of the mental health benefits to a level that are carried in this measure as they growth. Other benefits are not quite as high. What it reflects is the negotiations that have taken place with that employer or that employer group with the insurance carrier to meet the particular needs of this employer and its pool of employees. And that's been a negotiated arrangement. that typically goes on with other employers as well, private and public. Because of that negotiating position, it is extremely difficult to place a dollar amount on what it was, what this would cause as an increase, because if the employer chose to increase the mental health benefit, they might negotiate a reduction in some other kind of employee benefit, which might net out to not an overall cost increase for that employer. It is extremely situational, and that is one of the points of the task force, is to take a look at actuarial studies and to see what those costs might be if they can in fact be determined on a very clear basis. At this point, it's very difficult to place a dollar cost on what this might be.
Follow-up.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman. So you're saying that the negotiation team is planning to ask for the 25% increase in the mental health benefits, but governor only has $40 million to allow for employees' increase in wages and benefits. So if they are mandated to ask for 25% increase in mental health benefits, then they have no choice but get less increase in salary. So it takes away the negotiation team's flexibility in either ask for more in salary or less in benefits if this mandate goes through. I mean, if this mandated increase goes through.
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, there could be some, as you say, limitations on flexibility. Mm-hmm. What it would do is say that this particular benefit is going to be this dollar amount. Again, the program, however, would not go into effect for any contracts that have currently been negotiated and arrived at. So the future cost, if any, would be in the year 2001 for any state programs that have been negotiated or will be negotiated in the future. I haven't had an opportunity to thoroughly analyze the information I received late on Friday from Public Employee Benefits Board. They will do more analysis of this if you would require additional information.
Yes, I would appreciate that. Also, Mr. Chair,
yes.
Another question.
Yes.
So what is the impact on local government with the mandated increase? And on private individuals?
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, the same general principles would apply. That is, it would be dependent on the programs that they currently have and the programs that they would seek in the future for their employees. This was a very difficult concept to pin a number on, and I believe that that is why the task force is being charged with taking a look at that, because that has been a very complex concept to arrive at a figure. I don't believe that any study that I have seen reference to at this point has placed a value on it, a number. It's always been a range, and it's based on some experience over time, but it's applicable by jurisdiction to jurisdiction and how they do their negotiations. And the same principles would apply to private employers as well.
Mm-hmm. Another question,
yes.
Mr. Chairman. Is this a figure that the League of Oregon Counties or League of Oregon Cities can provide because we are not supposed to impose unfunded mandates, and I'm concerned that either local governments cannot absorb the increase or the state might have to put that in the budget and reimburse them for the mandated increase.
Okay. Does the county want to respond to that? Mike McCarthy? Mike McCracken? Okay. Would you come up and identify yourself, please?
Mike McCracken, Executive Director of the Association of Community Mental Health Programs affiliated with ALC. Senator Yee, any amount diverted to pay for this increase would come from salaries. And that's essentially the same answer as applies to the state. A lump sum is granted in these negotiations, and if health insurance benefits are increased, then there's less dollars available for salaries. So it doesn't constitute a new mandate in the sense that that they'd have to pay more money than they would totally allocate for the combination of salaries and benefits, if that helps.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
It's not a new mandate, but it is a mandated increase, and if there's an impact, we need to know what it is for local governments.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, the total increase we'd estimate about 0.6%. We had the independent actuary firm of PricewaterhouseCoopers take a look at a 40% increase. They came back with an overall net increase of only 1% in premiums. Since this is 25%, we'd estimate about 0.6%, 0.6 of 0.1%. So whatever the increase is, it's quite small. The actual experience in other states, what has been done is that it's not even measurable in many states. And it's less than 0.5%. But whatever we're talking about something very small. In terms of mandating benefits on local governments, again, they have the flexibility to adjust their salary and benefit programs to absorb it so it doesn't result in a net cost increase for taxpayers of the local jurisdiction.
Mr. Chair, I have a question. Commissioner Cracken.
Just a moment.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Well, local governments are very concerned with any mandated increase in cost, especially after Measure 47 and Measure 50, that they really cannot absorb any increase in mandated costs. That's why I feel we need to have some information about what is the cost increase. In state governments, local governments, and for private individuals.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I guess I've done the best job I can of answering that question. The point is that it really depends on what the mix of salary and benefits are going to be, and local governments have the ability to control that. So in terms of any net cost increase due to them because of this bill,
I will try to get those numbers for you, too, and so you can look at it and see what the impact
is. The other point of view, since I'm here, Mr. Senator Hannon and Representative Yee, there is a positive benefit to counties who are required to provide mental health services under Oregon law. And what happens is when people run up against their limits, so that their group health insurance plan doesn't provide the coverage they need, then they often fall into the Oregon Health Plan or into the general resources of county government. So, as a matter of fact, county government would benefit to some degree, a small degree, but to some degree from the passage of this measure. Because there would be less people coming from the private sector into the public sector because they lost money.
But your testimony, Mr. McCracken, I used to confirm, would be the combination of the salaries and benefits wouldn't be to the local jurisdictions, whether it be a city or a county, wouldn't be more than 1%, and could be as low as 0.6%.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, that's exactly correct.
Thank you very much.
I have another question for Mr. McCracken. Is there any documented evidence saying that there's 10,500 for adults and 12,500 for children or adolescents is not adequate?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, yes. Barney Spade, using and numbers I think from the Public Employees Benefit Board, I found that from 5 to 7% of the enrollees in their packages find the existing benefit limits to be too low to meet their needs, and so that they've had to go outside of the system to get care, outside of the health insurance system. There are other people with other numbers. I'm not sure the range I think I've heard in all the discussions we've had is somewhere between 3 to 7%. Less.
I think there's not what you did.
Mr. Powell, would you like to come up and answer the question?
Yes, good.
I'd rather not prefer this with a public hearing than the work session.
Chairman, thank you. For the record, my name is John Powell, representing Regents Blue Cross and Shield of Oregon. I think in terms of the figures that were being discussed, in terms of percentage, it's not a percentage of the enrollees. I believe that's a percentage of those who had sought services, which is a limited percentage of the total number of enrollees, and then that percentage would apply to those enrollees. So the point is those that were bumping up against or breaking through the caps is a fairly small number of the total, including those that were seeking mental health services.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I would appreciate some information regarding any documented evidence that this benefits is not sufficient.
Yes, Representative
Butler. I just had a couple of issues that I wanted to make sure that you understood. I have in all of my entire district, which is about a third of the state of Oregon, I only have one psychiatrist in that entire district, and he's retired. So, but he's my specialist in this regard, and he very strongly favors Senate Bill 1331, and I want you to take any of my comments based upon that, because I checked with my specialist. Now, I want you to know that we don't have many people that need psychiatrists in my district too. So, and that's evidence that one retired psychiatrist, based upon his discussion with me, he said there are some long term nature of these kinds of things. And sometimes the repetitive nature of rehabilitation costs is sometimes fairly expensive. And I appreciate the comments that have been made that can come back within a county and be assisted and accomplished there. The second issue that he raised, and I think it's a very good one, is that many times these folks have other higher related medical costs that are associated with their lifestyles or with the habit forming issues that we're relating here. But still in all, the testimony that has been offered today and the information which we have received, which he was able to authenticate for me, I think fairly well to my satisfaction as an accountant, really this is a very small cost overall, and particularly with the sideboards which have been built in. So I have no further
I'll put a question to Senator Yee.
Chairman, I have another question.
Yes.
Which is, in this bill, it provides for creation of a task force on mental health parity.
And that's
of 7 members. And my question is, if the task force is going to find out the needs of mental health of Oregonians, and the extent to which the needs are not being met, why don't we do the increase in benefits after the finding of the task force is presented to the legislature, rather than mandate an increase before the study?
I guess we could use the same argument on the gas tax. Why increase the gas tax until we enact legislation to increase the gas tax?
But I guess the more logical approach would be to do the study and then do any increase if necessary.
Well, the interim study is going to be a task force, and as I indicated earlier, it's going to be part of a human resources subcommittee that the president and speaker will be appointing interim committee, and they're going to look at the issues. There's both sides of the issues. There's those that advocate that it will not increase substantially the cost. There's others that advocate that it will increase. And hopefully this will separate the bear from the buckwheat for them so they can see what it is.
I'd like to make a comment.
Yes,
I
please.
Want to say I'm very concerned with the healthcare insurance costs then we keep mandating increases without doing a thorough study, I think that we are going to make it not affordable to a lot of Oregonians who have no health insurance. I think Oregon has done well in reducing the number of uninsured individuals and keeping costs down. But if we keep mandating increase without a thorough study and do unnecessary increases, we're going to cause the insurance costs to go up, and a lot of individuals will not be able to afford health insurance, and it will increase costs for state government and local governments. I'd like to have those figures, if I may, but I want to express my concerns.
Okay. Further questions or comments? Representative Starr?
Sir, I'm ready to make a motion if you want to accept it.
The motion by Senator Starr is to move Aid Growth Senate Bill 1331 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
E?
No.
Kim?
Aye.
Beck?
Aye.
Schrader?
No.
Butler?
Aye.
Starr?
Aye.
Cannon?
Aye. The motion passes. I'll carry the Senate and the bill, and Representative Butler will carry it in the House.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll open the hearing and work session on House Bill 3292. Oh, excuse me, we'll correct that, and Senate Bill 947. Is back up on our agenda? Are you sure?
Yes, it is. Mr. Chair, members of the committee,
open the hearing and work session on Senate Bill 947.
When we acted on this last week, I was labored under the misapprehension that it was actually scheduled, and it was not. And so what I need is a motion from the committee to move the bill as amended with the A2 amendment to forward with the due pass.
Sure, I'm sorry about them, but I think Senator Lynn should be here. I don't think I don't have a tendency to vote for this bill.
Okay. We'll close the hearing. We're session on House Bill 3292. Ms. Keller.
Okay.
John Sally, OTA. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is John Salek. I'm the Director of Safety for the Oregon Trucking Association based in Portland. We represent about 650 motor carriers who operate in Oregon. I'm here to testify in favor of House Bill 3292. It's an important step toward improving highway safety in Oregon. It's also a piece of landmark legislation because the problem we seek to address is a national problem. And the Federal Highway Administration, part of the U.S. Department of Transportation, and the American Trucking Association are watching to see what success we have in dealing with this issue here in Oregon. We currently have a law in the trucking industry that requires mandatory drug and alcohol testing, and it's a pretty good law. We've been able to remove quite a few people in the last 6 or 7 years from the highways who choose to abuse alcohol or use controlled substances. Many of them have been referred through counseling into treatment programs, and they come back to us to be very productive in our industry. However, there's a loophole in the regulation, and that's that there is no way to guarantee that a future employer will be able to learn about the past positive drug tests of a truck driver. And there's a case right here in Salem, Oregon, where one driver has produced 6 positive drug tests for methamphetamines and is still employed in our industry. and the rules do not permit that information to go forward to the next employer. We also have an employer in Oregon who terminated a truck driver because of a positive drug test, and then found several weeks later, just by accident, that that same driver was working for a friend of his. And the next employer had no way of knowing about the previous drug testing history. This bill, House Bill 3292, would close that loophole by moving the positive drug test record to the driver's license, the commercial driver license. In addition, it would mandate that a program of drug and alcohol testing that meets the requirements of the federal government be in place when a motor carrier registers or renews the vehicles that they're operating. I think that's all I need to say now, other than we're very much in favor of this bill. We believe it does address a serious issue in our industry, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you. Bob?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to point out one quick thing. This bill is supported by the entire trucking industry in Oregon. It's refreshing this year to be unanimously in support of more than one thing. You have seen a fiscal impact, and I want to talk about that in just a minute. The one I've seen, at least, has one flaw in it, in our opinion. The fiscal impact speaks to the number of entries on the driver's employment record for drug and alcohol. However, in the case of alcohol, under the alcohol random testing program, there is no medical review officer, and therefore, under this bill, there's no notification of positive alcohol tests, just drugs. The Federal Department of Transportation estimates that their testing in 1997, there were 2.4% positive test rates. At least in our consortium here in Oregon, they're slightly less than that. Doing the mathematics, it comes down to using that figure and not having alcohol. It comes down to about 40% less than the estimate that I saw in your fiscal because of the fewer reported cases and the fewer hearings and the fewer using all the same figures that were in the fiscal. You come down to the necessity for less than one person rather than that was in the fiscal, and you would need to process 1,304 entries instead of 2,175 using the same mathematics.
Bob, let me do this. Young, can I ask you to step aside for a moment and bring ODOT up? Because
sure.
I think if we can compare the numbers here, Kelly Chandler, please. You've heard Mr. McKellar's description that the amount of the fiscal impact might actually be, in fact, lower than what is shown here on the staff analysis.
Mr. Chair, members of the Committee, Kelly Taylor, Department of Transportation. We have looked at how many number of commercial drivers there are, the fact that 50% are required to be tested for and be a part of the random. And then we got the numbers of positive test results partially from Mr. McKellar in a meeting we had when we worked through the bill, and he stated that in their consortium it was about 4% were testing positive, and we looked at some of the nationals. And so we took the number of CDLs times 50% times 4 to get the positive entries, and then we've looked at what I believe is a very conservative number that are going to request a hearing for their due process, because you have to realize that by us putting this on their driving record, it could have a very profound impact on their employment. In other words, they won't be employed anymore. I mean, that's, you know, so people are going to ask for hearings. And we've only a 20% hearing rate, which is what we get right now for implied consent. So that's very reasonable. I actually believe it could be more. So I believe our fiscal is accurate, given the information we've had, and thinking that it's only a 20% hearing rate request.
Mr. McKellar, where did you arrive at your numbers? How did you arrive at those?
Mr. Chair, the only place that we disagree is on alcohol, in that we believe that their figure was calculated on the basis of alcohol and drug, and there would not be alcohol.
There would not be alcohol?
Because there's no medical review officer, and there is no requirement to report an alcohol figure.
Yes, Jordan.
Mr. Chair, the agency did not use alcohol in their calculation. They only looked at the drug portion of cases, and they left that off.
Okay.
So there'd be a smaller increase.
Then I'm wrong, and it's the first time so far today. But I assure you it'll be wrong again sometime. I apologize.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure we're comparing the same numbers. Okay. Is there anything else you wish to testify?
Good bills should pass. We need it in the trucking industry.
Okay. Ms. Taylor?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to walk you through how we see this bill might work very quickly. And a couple of things I think you should think about should you decide to move the bill to help facilitate implementation, make it very clear what your intent is. When there's a positive test drug result, the medical review officers forward that report to the Department of Motor Vehicles. And DMV would need to notify the driver prior to putting it on the record as part of the due process and give them an opportunity for hearing to say this isn't me, or the drug test wasn't valid, or it wasn't done correctly, or whatever. And that would be the type of scope of the hearing. And only either if they don't request a hearing or if they don't prevail at the hearing, then we would put that on the driving record. And then we would make sure that we would only release that information if the person submitted a permission slip. We would not be part of the general driving record. We'd have to do some programming to kind of try to siphon that out. The bill also establishes a civil penalty for $1,000 for motor carriers who fail to establish or participate in a drug or alcohol testing program. But remember, only drug tests are being reported. And the expenditures are about $298,000 in the first biennium, $321,000 in the second biennium, the initial three FTE to process additional hearing requests. And like I said, that's a conservative estimate. There's a possibility of some revenue, although if the bill would succeed in improving motor carrier compliance, we would impose fewer penalties, and so the revenue would likely be less. What the bill does not consider is, and some things that I want you to think about, is it doesn't say how soon after the positive drug test result the medical review officer is supposed to turn it into us. So you may want to think about some timing in this issue there. And then the other thing is the bill talks about a motor carrier that meets a federal requirement and the code and federal regulations, and that definition is for hire or private. And so we're unclear. We believe that motor carriers who are not involved in commercial trucking enterprise, such as public employers, would be exempt from the bill. Don't know if you mean that to be the intent. But by relying on the federal definition, it may not include public employers.
Were all these issues raised in the House Transportation Committee?
I think this was part of my original testimony.
Okay, and they chose not to deal with it.
Because
the reason I'm asking, this is Ways and Means. We're not a substantive committee.
I understand. I'll just get them on the record.
I feel totally uncomfortable with the litany of things you're suggesting here that the committee consider doing. We don't have that purview or power. We're accused of having too much power than it is. But
I will look Senator Hannon at my original testimony to see. I honestly don't remember off the top of my head.
Okay, chill.
But anyway, that's where the fiscal comes from. That's how I think it would play out. So the issue.
Okay. Senator Yee.
Mr. Chairman. So the employment and driver's record cannot be disclosed to the new employer if the truck driver does not give a release to keep the record.
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, that's correct. We would place it on the employment record, but we would not release that particular part of the record to anyone unless we had a permission slip from the driver. These are medical information. It's part of the privacy. I mean, there has been quite some question about privacy and due process, and so that was part of the trying to address that.
So another question.
Yes.
So the new prospective employer cannot see that record, whether the person has a driving record or not, I mean driving under the influence record or not.
Mr. Chairman, let me clarify. This is not driving under the influence. The positive test drug result doesn't mean you were driving while you had the drug. It just means you were asked to take a random test, and at that time, your body showed traces of drugs. But that doesn't mean you were driving under the influence. So it's not like a ticket like driving under the influence. I want to say that first. And yes, if it were me, and I was applying for a job with Bob, and Bob called up DMV to get a copy of my record, he would not see that segment of my record unless I gave him a permission slip to show to DMV.
Mr. Chairman, a denial to show driving record, employment driving record, could be an indication that the person has a record of
a drug test result.
And probably would not be hired.
Yes.
If I were going to hire somebody and ask for their driving history and they chose not to give it to me, it would raise all kinds of red flags.
Yes.
This is not the kind of person I want to hire.
Mm-hmm.
Is there further discussion? Representative Butler.
Doesn't it go on the driver's license? Isn't that what we're talking about?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, no. This is part of the driving record maintained on the computer files at DMV, and we keep a private driving file for you, things that you get in your own car on your own time. And if you're employed to drive, we also keep those things noted that these happened while you were under the employment. This would be part of your employment driving record.
But it would be available to the employer then?
With a permission slip, yes,
right.
Representative
okay.
Butler.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there further discussion? Representative Starr.
I move the House Bill 1392 to full
table. Okay. We'll close the hearing on House Bill 1392. Open the work session on House Bill 1392. Representative Starr now moves that we send House Bill 3292, Ayne Gross, to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Yee.
Aye.
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 Motion carried. And Senator Yee, would you like to carry this in the Senate?
In the full? In the full.
Yeah. Okay. And Representative Carly?
Sure, Representative.
Do you want to carry it? Okay. If there's no other business before us, we are adjourned until 8 a.m. tomorrow morning.
The way you use is very dry, down to the point, so but you can
not be
here. Is this going to come up on
the
I probably will set up a little time to go over to you. Do you have a call?
Okay.